We're pleased to welcome to our program this year Coach Larry Gelwicks. For 36 years, Larry Gelwicks has served as the volunteer coach for the Highland rugby team. The team's success, which has produced a varsity win-loss record of 418 wins and just 10 losses in 36 years, including 20 national rugby championships, has caught the attention of Hollywood some years back, and many of you have seen this, is the story of Coach Gelwicks and the Highland rugby team in the movie Forever Strong. Following a successful national release in theaters, Forever Strong is now the in-flight movie on more than a dozen airlines worldwide. Coach Gelwicks has received the Best of State Award as the best high school coach in the state of Utah. He was named as the recipient of the BYU Outstanding Service Award. The national media has labeled Coach Gelwicks the winningest coach in America. Coach Gelwicks received his bachelor's and master's degrees in organizational communications here at BYU. Professionally, Larry's career has centered on the airline and the travel industry and as a host of a syndicated talk show. He currently serves as CEO of Columbus Travel and Bountiful, and is recognized as a leader in leadership and management coaching. He's been a popular convention speaker. Larry's addressed conferences and seminars both across the country and around the world on the dynamics of leadership, developing winning strategies and attitudes, and championship companies staffed by championship people. His appearances, corporate coaching, and keynotes include McDonald's, American Airlines, the IRS, Banana Republic, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the Utah Jazz. Larry has also been a commencement speaker here at BYU. Please welcome this morning Coach Larry Gelwicks, the winningest coach in America.
Tradition is king, where coaches are legend. Warriors will rise.
We tried.
You try, you sit. This is about doing.
Your dad just wants you to win, huh?
He wants to win. It has nothing to do with me.
I don't play for your team, I play for myself.
Richard Penning Jr., this is your second DUI. You are a ward of this court.
Hey, Penning, you too pretty to play?
I know you love rugby, and I know you've heard of Highland.
Yeah, we beat you. You can come find out how.
With nothing left to lose, Rick Penning has a chance.
Most of what we do here, I learned playing rugby for Coach Gelwicks.
To discover what it takes to be a champion.
Welcome, gentlemen, to Highland Rugby.
You know exactly why I'm here, and you still act like you care.
You just gotta learn to listen.
I score. That is what I do.
I guess I have to keep my eye on you, huh?
His will be tested.
Dad, grab your stuff. You're coming home. I'm sorry. I didn't see this coming.
His dedication will be tried.
Where's the loyalty, man?
We deserve that title.
What do you mean, we?
How bad for a rookie?
His reward will be freedom.
I play for Highland. I only want him to have what I never had.
What makes you think that he wants what you never had?
Gelwicks stole my life.
Please give me mine back!
We will show them our best today.
I want you to be forever strong on the field, so you'll be forever strong off it.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Really nice to be here. I'm ready to buy whole life. You know, I'm 31 years old. I got 40 years ahead of me with that. I want to thank the symposium for inviting my wife and I to join you and Stan and Ben at Beacon Financial. It's happened to be clients of ours, Columbus Travel. We do a lot of award and incentive travel all across the country for people. My career has been in the airline and travel industry, and it has allowed me to be a volunteer coach. Now, the Highland Rugby team was a big operation. We had over 200 players, grade 7 to 12 every year, 15 coaches, 5 different teams. I mean, it was a big operation with that. My last year of coaching, we had 238 players. And in that 36 years, you know, I saw a lot of really good players, but I only saw a few great players. I saw a lot of good teams. We played a lot of good teams. But I only saw a lot of good teams. I only saw a few great teams. I learned that the biggest obstacle to move from goodness to greatness is goodness. In other words, when we're good, when things are going well for us, we're profitable, we think everything is fine, sure, we could do a little bit better, but we are good. We don't always feel a pressure, a good positive pressure to move, to pay the price, to move from good to great. I also learned that for championship teams, we had 20 national championships. And you don't always start out on day one with a championship team, do you? You don't always have a group of Heisman Trophy winners. You can't have a bunch of boys that are tripping over their shoelaces. But you start out with good players, and you want to make them great. And to do that, you got to have not a good but a great game plan, which has built and developed over time, and you gotta have great coaches that are gonna coach good players to make them great players. But those coaches aren't born great either. I've learned that greatness is something that is built, it is developed, it comes over time for all of us. Now, as I've tried to identify what is different, what throws the switch? In a company, in an organization, in a church, in a synagogue, in a family, what throws the switch to move from good to great? What are those qualities? You know, I've seen a lot of really good things that help move a business along, move a family along, an organization, a church, a synagogue. And I have kind of narrowed that down, and I see many things that contribute, but I see five championship strategies that just flat out are always there and seem to guarantee success. And I want to talk about these with you. Now, here's an important thing. In about 42 minutes, 12 noon, I've learned never to compete with lunch. All right? You do that when you coach young men. In 42 minutes, we're all going to walk out these doors. And there is a question that I'm going to ask you now that you need to answer. And you will answer either affirmatively or by default. That question is, in this time that we have spent together, will you walk out these doors having been merely entertained? And yes, you will be entertained in these next 42 minutes. Will you walk out having been merely entertained, or will you walk out changed and ready to implement changes as good as you are to move your company, your family, your organization to greatness? Let's talk about the five championship strategies. First, go horizontal. Walk down to Barnes & Noble, and you will find that you can buy every book that has ever been written on leadership and management, and it really comes down to two things. There are horizontal leaders and there are vertical leaders. Let's talk about a vertical leader. Let's talk about vertical first. Have you ever seen, maybe you've played for a coach where if you're winning, it's great coaching. And if things aren't kind of going your way, it's what? It's lazy, what is it? It's bad players. It's lazy, messed up players. In a business organization, the CEO, the department head, the manager, whoever it may be, if things are going well, it's dynamic leadership, which he or she calls attention to themselves, don't they? In other words, it's me. You see, with a vertical leader, the assumption is this: without me, you can't do it. I am so critical to your success that it's about me. Now, let's take a look at a horizontal leader. Kind of interesting. At the first year, we always had over 200 players, as I mentioned. I'd gather all the boys together and sit them down. And I would say, fellas, on this team, there is no difference between you and me. There really is. I'm the head coach, and you're in seventh grade or ninth grade or 12th grade. There's no difference between us in terms of human dignity and respect and expectations to you for you to fulfill your role. But there is a difference between us. And that's our job. That's our responsibility. You see, I can't win without you. You can't win without me. Let's focus our attention on cooperation rather than competition, so that we can achieve our shared goal. What we find is that horizontal leaders multiply the intelligence of everyone around them. You remember back in school, maybe there was an assignment, a group assignment, and it was Bob or Mary. Everybody wanted to be in their group, didn't they? Why? Because they lifted the whole group up. That is a multiplier. That is a horizontal leader. That is one who checks his or her ego at the door, and the focus is on accomplishing the goal. I knew as a coach who made me look good. I knew as a coach who got Hollywood's attention to make a movie about a coach. That was the players. We also find that with vertical leaders, there's diminishers. Now, just by a show of hands, how many have ever, sometime in your life, played for a coach, worked for someone, maybe it was a parent, maybe it was employment, but you worked in a diminishing vertical situation? All right. Now, John, I'm going to pick on you in just a minute because I know you. And just right here in the front, give me three or four hands. Who's been in a vertical situation? In one phrase, I want you to tell me how it made you feel, and I'm going to repeat it. How did you feel in that vertical? How did that person make you feel?
Kind of worthless.
Worthless. Who else?
In my situation, they were building for the following year. The coach's son was a junior, so the seniors were...
You were expendable. You were expendable. Who else has been in a kind of a diminishing vertical situation? Say in employment. Come on, I saw a bunch of hands there. Not needed.
Unmotivated.
Now, who's worked in a multiplying horizontal environment? Who's done that? How did you feel? You say great. What does that mean? Awesome. Okay, great. He moved from good to great to awesome. All right, who else has been in this situation? Again.
Empowered.
Valued. Valued. Who else? Couple more.
Able to contribute.
What we find is that horizontal leaders lift the boats all. They create a high tide in the harbor and lift the intelligence, lift the motivation of everyone. Now, here are some of the, as I have looked in 36 years of business, CEO of an airline, in the travel industry, and as a coach, I've put together some characteristics of horizontal multiplying leaders and vertical diminishing leaders. Let's take a quick look at these. A horizontal leader is a talent magnet. What a talent magnet does, it attracts talent to the organization. It brings out the best. It accelerates performance. People are willing to take a risk, whereas a vertical diminisher or a vertical leader is an empire builder. Now, right here, Ernie, that was a football team you played on?
Basketball.
That coach was building an empire for his son, wasn't he? And you were expendable. You didn't matter, and you knew it. And so were you willing to sacrifice it all, win one more for the Gipper? For him.
Not for him.
But for you, yes, but not for him. We know that a horizontal leader is a challenger. It will challenge the thinking. And whether he agrees with you or disagrees with you, you need to be able to have a basis. He challenges the thinking. He opens up the creativity. It's what an overused phrase, out of the box, whereas a vertical leader is a know-it-all. They have the answer. How many have ever sat in a conference room with a vertical leader in charge and they ask for opinions, but your opinion really doesn't matter? You've done that. You think, why am I even here? A horizontal leader encourages debate, welcomes discussion. It's okay to disagree as long as you have a basis for your opinions. Now, well, I just think this. Whereas a vertical leader is the decision maker, an investor. A horizontal leader invests in the players, in the team, and will challenge them to do things and give them the resources and empower them without criticism. Whereas a vertical leader is a micromanager. Now, looking at this, there was a wonderful article. The title of the article was Blue Ocean Leadership. It was in the May issue this year of the Harvard Business Review. And it made mention of a Gallup study for these years, published this year, the state of the American workplace. The results are shocking. What the Gallup study showed us is that of the typical workplace, and most companies are in total denial, well, that's company XYZ, but not us. 30%, basically one in three employees, is really engaged in the mission and the goals of the company. What they found is that 70%, and this is where the shocker comes, 70% are not working up to what the employee, not the employer, what the employee recognizes as his or her ability. In other words, of my present, current ability, am I working up to my potential? 70% said, no, I'm not. The shocker is that in that 70%, it's then subdivided. 20% of the American workforce is actually subverting because of they're disenfranchised, they're angry. I'm not being treated fairly. They're not treating me enough. They're not paying me enough. In other words, I'm dissatisfied. They actually will consciously subvert the goals of their employer. And that's often in frontline employment, isn't it? The ones who have contact with the public first, 20%. The other 50% were simply they did not feel motivated to get anywhere near their potential. The cost to the U.S. industry on an annual basis, Gallup put, and Harvard concurred, $550 billion in lost productivity. Now, this reminded me of a study called the Wiseman Report. Came out of two researchers down in Palo Alto, connected with Stanford University. And what the Wiseman did is they used the term multiply and diminish. I use horizontal and vertical. It's been my pleasure to participate as a presenter in some of their seminars. And a wonderful book, Multipliers, by Liz Wiseman and Greg McEwen, highly recommended. But what they did in the Wiseman Report is they went out to thousands of businesses in education, healthcare, insurance, production, manufacturing, transportation. They took a look at all of these industries and they said, is your boss, be it a department head, a manager, a CEO, a vice president, is your boss more of a multiplier, I would use the term horizontal, or more of a diminisher or vertical? Now, in truth, no one is exclusively one or the other, are they? They're not. But they said, identify them in this camp. And then they said this. They said, for those who identified their boss, their manager, their CEO, their department head as mostly a diminisher, vertical leader, they asked them, of your current present ability, of what you could give, your creativity, your commitment, your dedication, of what your present ability is to contribute to this company, give us a number, give us a percentage of what you're contributing. The national average ran in a range from 20 to 50%, averaged at 49%. In other words, the employees, which includes that 70%, were giving slightly less than half of what they said I could do. Have you ever, when they work for a vertical leader, a diminisher, have you ever noticed that when a vertical leader walks out, everybody's head goes down, nobody makes eye contact? Why? It's like, I'm not going to say anything. I need this job. I'm not going to rock the boat. I'm going to do the minimum and I'm going to play it safe. Where's the creativity? Where is the commitment? Where is the ingenuity? Where is the out-of-the-box thinking? It's absent. It's frozen in a wasteland. Yet when they asked those horizontal leaders, what do we have happen here? There we go. When we asked those horizontal leaders or those employees, you work for a horizontal leader, a multiplier. How much of your present ability to contribute to this company? This is small companies, 3 and 4 employees. This is massive companies. The range was 70 to 100%. And what was interesting is that some people would respond, she is so good. She is such a fantastic manager. She gets 110% of me. Or, he is so good, I can't imagine a better boss. He gets 200% of me. Well, that's great. Think about it. It's mathematically impossible. You cannot give more than 100%, can you? But I want you to tell me, quickly, when someone is saying, she is so good, I give her 110%, what are they really saying? Help me out here. Just shout it out. I give it all my God. What? I'm doing more than I expected or I thought I could do. What else am I saying? I wish I could do more. In other words, I'm growing. I'm expanding. I'm willing to take on more responsibility. I'm learning in my job. You remember, we weren't born a great team. We're growing in it. I'm now growing from average to good to great. And my manager, my boss, is helping me do that. This is what we call the 2x effect. You see, when we have a problem, particularly in our government, what do? We take money and we throw money and resources at the problem. And sometimes that's what's needed. But that's what all empire builders do. That's the only thing they do. You got a problem in education, throw money at it. And maybe education needs money, but not only money. So what we do, the 2x effect, remember that vertical leaders on a national average are getting an average of 49%. The range was 20 to 50 in the Wiseman study. But if we as leaders become horizontal multipliers, and that's what I coach, that average goes to 70 to 100. It essentially, we are doubling what our employees, what our people, what our family, what our community, what our church, what our synagogue will do based upon the leadership that they are receiving. We are doubling it without additional capitalization or market forces with that. You want to be a champion? Go horizontal. Multiply the people, lift them up. a talent magnet, a challenger, an investor. Number two, don't play with snakes. Mike was one of the best rugby boys that I ever coached. This kid was just nails. He was tough. And he told me this story, played all 4 years in high school for me. He told me this story when he was 14 years old. It was a hot July morning in Salt Lake City. They live up on the bench. He walks out into his garage. Now he's 14, so what do we already know about him? We know he's brain dead. All right. I coached him. They are 14-year-old boys are brain dead. You know there's only two things they think about? One is, what am I going to eat and when? And the other goes something like this. Does she really think I'm hot? That's it. That's all they think about. Now, you ladies know that as we men get older, it doesn't really change, does it? Anyway, so he walks out and he sees a snake. He walks up to it. It's a rattlesnake. And being a brain-dead 14-year-old, he gets a board. He kind of positions the board on the neck of the snake. So not, he didn't hurt it, but he immobilized it. He reaches down and he picks it up. He is holding a snake by its neck. Now he's telling me this. Shout out to me if your son or grandson or your neighbor said, I was holding a rattlesnake by the neck. Shout it out. What would you think? Real loud. Dumb. What? Do you really have stupid tattooed on your forehead? You know? And I'm gonna make a self-confession. When Mike told me that he was holding a rattlesnake by its neck, that would be the logical thing to think, but that was not the first thing that came to my mind. Honestly, the very first thing that came to my mind was this. Do snakes have necks? I don't know. Does a snake have a neck? Anyway, so Mike's holding this, and soon all the kids in the neighborhood are coming over, and he's doing that typical 14-year-old brain-dead boy thing with the snake. Ha! And now he's chasing people, usually the girls, around the, and everyone's yelling, screaming. At one point, Mike said he grabbed the snake and was doing this, swinging it around. Hey, Bill, I'm going to throw it at you. It's going to bite you. He's doing this. Everyone's yelling, screaming, having a great time. Everyone except the snake. This snake did not feel loved. And even worse, being from Utah, this snake did not feel special. Anyway. And, you know, the people from back east are going, what? That wasn't funny. Yeah, that's a Utah thing. Everybody's special. Anyway, and then he's playing with it, and a buddy of his calls him out. He goes, yeah, and he puts the snake out here, and he's holding it. He's talking to his buddy. But without even noticing it, as his focus shifted from the snake to his buddy, this happened. He just started, his focus was off of it. And the snake came down and bit him on the neck. And Mike was surprised. It bit me. I said, Mike, what did you think was going to happen? It's a rattlesnake. And that's what rattlesnakes do. They go from house to house just looking for people to bite. So I said, Mike, you knew what it was when you picked it up. You know what rattlesnakes do. And I want you to answer this because he had not learned that universal law of nature and of life that we have all learned. You shout it back to me. You play with a rattlesnake. Sooner or later, what's going to happen? It's going to bite you. You want to be a champion? Recognize that there is a right and wrong in life. There is an ethical moral standard that has nothing to do with politics or religion. You may be based in either one or both. But there is a basic human value that champions. It's, you know, winners never cheat. You don't lie. You don't steal. You don't take advantage of people even though you can and they agree to it. There's a basic human value. And I mean to think for a minute of your, what do you want to call it? Temptation, problem, challenge. You call it whatever you want to call it. But think of a problem, a challenge, a temptation, personal or professional, that kind of dogs you, that kind of is just kind of there. You try to tell me you don't know what's right and wrong. We know what is right. You know? Let me give you an example of one of the biggest rattlesnakes that plagues our society and our business industry. It's the rattlesnake of telling the truth or not telling the truth. Now, this is going to surprise you. Okay? You see, telling the truth, as I teach my players, has nothing to do with what we say. Did you know that telling the truth has nothing to do with the words that you say? It has everything to do with the message you want me to understand. Let me give you an example. I've got here, let's see, Mark and Ernie. Mark is my son, all right? Ernie is his best buddy. Mark comes to Dad and says, Dad, I want to go over to Ernie's. And I say, well, that's fine, son, but it's a school night, so I don't want you going to the movies. So Mark goes over to Ernie's, they hang out, and Forever Strong is still playing in the theater, so they go to the movies. Now, I'm doing the good dad thing. They come home, and I'm waiting up for, isn't that the good dad, the good mom thing? We wait for our kids to come home. And Mark walks into the home, and I say, well, hello, son, where have you been? Now, listen very carefully to what he said. I went to Ernie's house. And he puts a period where he should have put a comma. Now, did he go to Ernie's house? Yeah, that is a factually correct statement. But by saying that and putting a period where he should have put a comma, you tell me, what did he want me to think? Yeah, now, did he give me factually correct information? Yes. Did he just lie through his teeth? Absolutely. The essence of a lie has nothing to do with what we say. It has everything to do with what we want the other person to believe, be it in our personal lives or in our professional lives. You know, the great test of who we are. This test is fantastic. You can't cheat on it. The test of who we are is this. What do I do when no one will know what I do? I would tell my players, you know, you come into class and you're not as prepared for a test as maybe you think you ought to be. And a buddy has the answers. And if you cheat, and I don't even care about this class, if I cheat and take those answers, guess what? I get an A. And no one will ever know. I walk into 7-Eleven, get my big gulper Slurpee, and I walk out. They gave me too much change. And rather than on my own walk back in and return something that doesn't belong to me, what do? That was their mistake, not mine. My lucky day. And I walk away. And guess what? No one will ever know. And how sad. I just sold my soul for a quarter. You know, I say to the boys, what internet sites do you look at? When no one will ever know. You want to be a champion? Go horizontal. You want to be a champion? Don't play with snakes. You want to be a champion? Hit the field running. Oh, I do love this one. It's all about attitude and effort. I have learned that attitude and effort is more important than natural smarts. It's more important than natural ability. Attitude and effort are everything. Now, my wife, who joined me here today, and I, we have 5 children. And I'd have isn't the start of school, which we just went past, isn't that a great time of year? It's a great time to give counsel and blessings to your children and encourage them, set goals. And I'd have a chat with my kids, and I'll tell you about a chat I had with our eldest son. Now, and he was 14 going into high school, and most of my parenting, I try to have it, more relaxed and talking, but this one I intentionally created a very vertical environment. So he's in the family room, I sit him in a chair, I'm standing above him. That's a diminishing vertical environment, but it was by design. I said, son, now, you know, there's something about 14-year-old boys, have you ever, and he was brain dead too, Have you ever noticed how they their head is always kind of cocked and their mouth is open like this? It's like, what am I going to throw you, a fish? You know? And so he's sitting there, huh? You know? And I said, now, son, you're about to enter high school. I want you to know something. I don't care about your grades. I don't care about your grades. And you could see those 14-year-old boy wheels start turning, like, what? He's going to, dad, the school Nazi, he doesn't care about my grades anymore. It's going to be good. It's going to be 4 years of party time, you know? And have you ever noticed someone when they're about to break into a smile or a smirk and it's totally inappropriate? They're like pulling it down because it's just, it would be so embarrassing. And they're trying, he's trying to hold back, saying, this is really going to be good. And I got down in my coaching. Now remember, he was seated. I got down in my coaching pose like this. And I'm nose to nose with him. Son, wipe the smirk off your face. This is far worse than anything you can imagine. He's like that. And I said, I don't care about your grades. I really don't. I care about you. I love you, son. I expect you to do your best. I expect your attitude and your effort to be the best. Now, if you come home with a poor grade and you look me in the eye and you say, Dad, I did everything I could have done. I went to the teacher for help. I turned in extra credit. I got a tutor. I did everything I could. Dad, this is it. This really is the best I could do. And I said, you know, if that is really the truth, and you didn't put a period where you should have put a comma, if you really gave it your best, and you got a poor grade, I'm okay with it. How can I ask him, if it's the truth, how can I ask him to do more than he's capable of this minute? I said, but if that's your best, I'll take it. But you're in a box right now. We have now got to change our game plan. We got to do something different because you're not going to stay in that hole the rest of your life, be a victim and feel sorry for yourself. Something's got to change, but I'll take it right now. And then we'll make the change. But I said, by golly, you come home with an A and you say something like, you know, that was nothing. That was a joke class. I was a teacher's pet. I got away with murder. I catch this, Dad. I got an A. I didn't even learn one thing and I still got an A. Am I good or what? Son, you come home with a grade like that and heaven help you. Because I don't care about the grades. I care about your attitude and your effort. Now, I've learned something about attitude. You know the most ridiculous thing you can say to a family member, an employee, an associate is, change your attitude. Hey, Larry, you need to change your attitude. We've all been told that, haven't we? It's the most ridiculous thing you can tell someone. I'm 64 years old, and I have an opinion, an attitude, a belief on everything, just like you do. And what has shaped my views and opinions? 64 years of living and everything that has ever happened to me. Now, hopefully, the purpose of a faith-based life, of education, of seminars and symposium, and of life is that we are getting better, aren't we? We are learning, we are enhancing our attitudes, our views, our opinions. We're getting more refined. We hope that that's the case. But 64 years of living have shaped my attitude. And some schmuck comes along and says, Larry, you need to change your attitude. Oh, just a minute. Let me change my attitude. It doesn't work that way. What I have learned is that we can change attitudes, but there's only one way to do it. If I want to change my attitude, I must first change my behavior. I've learned in 36 years of coaching that there is a behavior associated with every attitude. Change the behavior, the attitude and effort will follow, but not the other way around. You want to be a champion? Go horizontal. Don't play with snakes, things that we know are just flat out wrong, and hit the field running. Number four, expect to win. Now notice how WIN is spelled here, W-I-N. It's an acronym for what's important now. What's important now so that I can accomplish what I want tomorrow. Hey, in state, a lot of football games on Saturday. Let's see, Utah State, you Aggie fans are headed to Arkansas State. The Cougs are hosting Virginia, and the Running Utes are going to the Big House back at Michigan. It'll be an exciting week. You know, in addition to coaching rugby, I coach varsity football. Again, I had a job that allowed me a lot of free time. And I love football, and it's going to be an interesting weekend, isn't it? Some of you played football. What is a prevent defense? Who can, real fast, what's a prevent defense? Oh, come on. What is it? Deep coverage, sometimes called like a nickel package. You're gonna rush maybe three linemen and have three linemen, three linebackers for middle coverage, and five defensive backs. It's like, you know, and you're just covering. BYU could have used a little work on the that last week, but that's another story for another day. Just before halftime, anyway. What is a goal line defense? How would you characterize a goal line defense? What is it? Packed in, you got all the buffaloes together, you know, hip to hip, and those are big hips. And they're right there, and you're just gonna stuff every hole. Okay, here's the situation. Here's the situation. It's the fourth quarter, there's 2 seconds left, we're ahead by 6 points, the ball is at the 50. What are they gonna do? They're gonna do what Houston did at the end of the second quarter. It's the Hail Mary bomb, isn't it? What defense are we gonna do? We're gonna do that prevent defense. Okay, how about this? The ball is on the 1 foot line on the goal line. They're 1 foot from scoring. What are they gonna do? They're gonna slam it in. Okay, how about this? Back to halftime, end of the game, ball's at the 50. I put in my prevent defense, but I'm gonna change it. I'm gonna fake them out. I'm gonna put my goal line defense on the 50-yard line, and they're not gonna run the ball on me. How smart's that? Not too smart. Okay, let's go back to the 1 foot line. I'm gonna put in my prevent defense and only put down three down linemen, and they're not gonna throw on me. Yeah. You see, both are great defenses. But we ask ourselves at every stage, what is important now? What do I have to do right now to get me to the end of the game? You see, as coaches, we have an expression that we call end game. Where do I want to be at the end of the game, and how do I want to get there? We had an interesting, even for a non-insurance guy, I found the presentation of Whole Life Insurance. Where do I want to be when I'm 70 years old? What do I have to do right now? And that's, of course, what you do with your clients, but that's what we do in life, too. Champions understand that. You want to be a champion? Go horizontal. Don't play with snakes. Hit the field running with attitude and effort, and ask yourself constantly for you, your family, your business, and your clients, what is important right now? And lastly, focus on the final score. You know, I think of this. Can you imagine this scenario? It's just before you're going out to play for the Super Bowl. And you have a promise from the good Lord himself that if you give your absolute best effort, you're going to win. You're going to win. Guaranteed win the Super Bowl. If you, it doesn't matter about the rest of the team. It's only you. He said, and it's an absolute guarantee. Now, if that were really to happen, and you were giving it your best effort, and you were down by 50 points at halftime, would you quit? Of course not. But nobody comes back from 50. But you already know the final score. What if you were up by 50? Would you put it on cruise control because nobody ever comes back from 50 down? No, because it can all change. What if there's 1 minute to go, you're down by 22 points, and they have the ball? Would you quit? Would you throw in the towel? No, I see you shaking your head. Why not? Yeah. What do you, Jim McMahon? Yeah. What do you already know? You already know. Thank you, Paul. You know the final score. You don't know what's going to happen, but you know that something good's going to happen. Well, that doesn't happen in sports, does it? That promise. But that is what I have learned in life, because the final score is who we are. You know, the most frequent asked question that I get from my players, the most frequently asked question to my players was, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a lawyer, a doctor. I want to be a school teacher, a farmer, a truck driver. Number one is I want to be an insurance salesman. you know what I used to say? That's great. It doesn't matter what you want to be. It really doesn't, as long as it meets three things. It's honest and honorable. You have a passion for it. In other words, you enjoy doing it. And third, you can support yourself and your family. Then it doesn't matter. But as important as that question is, what do you want to be? It is not the most important question. You see, the most important question is not what do you want to be, but who. Who do you want to be? And I have learned in 36 years of coaching and a lifetime of living that who we are is the final score. It really is. You know? That's why people throughout history, historical figures, religious figures, have endured horrific things because they knew the final score. They knew who they were. They knew where they wanted to be at the end of the fourth quarter. And I'm going to flat out tell you, you go horizontal. It takes work. It doesn't just happen. You avoid the rattlesnakes that you already know are there. Attitude and effort. You hit the field running by changing behavior. You determine what is important right now so I can get what I want tomorrow. And then you figure out the final score of your life. Let me wrap it up with a very short story. One of my great players, his name is Bob. He's in his early 50s now. He's done very well for himself. Harvard MBA, went on to a great career in the food industry. He became the president of Burger King worldwide, and they were just tanking. You know, they're losing money everywhere. And he was hired away from PepsiCo. He was with KFC and Taco Bell, PepsiCo. And he was hired away, and he came in, and he was redoing things, And I stayed in touch with him and a lot of the boys since high school. I talked to him all the time. And he told me he was putting together the first international leadership conference for Burger King. He's putting it together. And so good luck and all that. Well, a couple days afterwards, he calls me. Hey, Bob, how are you? Good to see you, Coach. He still calls me Coach, even now, Coach. And I said, well, how did your talk go? You were going to outline the whole strategy for Burger King. He says, it went fantastic. They ate it up. I said, what did you tell them? He says, I taught them the five championship strategies that you taught me in high school. And then at another company he was over, I went and did some coaching and training for that company. He says, I taught him the five championship strategy. I said, oh, that's cute, but what did you really tell him? He says, no, Coach. And this is a direct quote. Those five championship strategies are better than anything I learned at Harvard. Close quote. Because they work. And of course, there's a lot of good stuff at Harvard. They flat out work. He says, you know, I can control the menu, the taste, the look and feel of the restaurant. I can control our advertising. But what we need is people. People that will rise to their full potential. And we are going to blow the lid off profitability. And they did. They rose to enormous profitability. And if you talk to Bob, he says, I taught him these five things. Now, we're about 1 minute from lunch, and I'm finished. We're going to walk out these doors. The question that I want you to ask is really two now. I'm going to add one to it. Ask yourself, am I walking out having been merely entertained with some great stories? Or am I going to walk out changed? Will I actually do something different? And I said I was going to add a second question to that. What am I learning right now? What is the direction and the feeling that comes to my heart and my mind right now of how these things apply to my own personal life, my relationship, marriage or partnership, my business, my family, my church, my synagogue? What comes to my mind and my heart that's telling me what I must do right now? God bless you. Thank you. Thanks for your help. Thank you.